You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Today, physicist Ian Durham begins his countdown of the top five physics stories of 2014.
If you believe that the universe is quantized at its fundamental level, or if you believe that our ability to measure the universe has a lower limit, then we would run into a point where we couldn't test this anymore, and it would appear finite to us, just very large.
And
is string theory right? Is it just fantasy? Caught in the landscape, out of touch with reality.
We congratulate the winners of FQXI's first video contest.
She's Zia Morali.
And he's Brendan Foster.
Welcome to the first of three special podcasts from the Foundational Questions Institute to mark the end of the year. As loyal listeners know, in December, we take a look back at the big stories in physics research of the past year with the help of FQXI member Ian Durham, a physicist at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire.
Those loyal listeners will also know that Ian prides himself on making controversial choices for the top story each year. His list always opens up furious debate. This year is no different, and I defy you to guess his number one pick. I spoke with Ian via Skype a few days ago to record his rundown. But before we even began the list, Ian ran through some of the stories that made the headlines this year, but didn't make his top five. Well, hello again, Ian Durham. Thank you for joining us and for giving us another rundown of the best or the most interesting stories in physics in 2014. Actually, before I sort of set you off on your list, I just wanted to mention that the last time I saw you in person was in Cambridge in about March, where you were running sort of an FQXI-sponsored meeting. And at that time, we kind of worked our way into a lecture at the Institute of Astronomy, which was just all about the kind of the BICEP 2 result, about this announcement about, you know, the discovery of primordial gravitational waves. And I think at that time, I remember you and I sort of smiling and saying, well, you know, the list is sorted for this year. We know exactly what's going to be number one.
Yep. I remember that. It immediately rocketed to number one on my list. And that was all the way back in March. And here it is. It's not even in my top five.
It's not even there now. I mean, obviously, this is something that we've been talking about a lot on that podcast over the years. So, I mean, I guess our very loyal listeners would probably know why it's not there. But yes, it was this huge announcement earlier on this year, the first time primordial gravitational waves had been detected. It was sort of touted as evidence of the inflation model of cosmology. It was telling us, you know, what happened soon after the Big Bang. We were really kind of homing in on early universe cosmology, and then what?
Well, so then somebody took a closer look at things, and somewhere along the line, somebody figured out that it was probably dust and not gravitational waves. And I think there's a lesson to be learned from this, and that is that in this day and age of the 24-hour news cycle and how budgets are allotted and how it's all about making a big splash sometimes, I think sometimes we rush to judgment of our own work. Now, and I'm not saying that the BICEP 2 people are wrong for doing what they did, but it, you know, things kind of snowball. I do believe that they had a caveat that said, you know, this is not fully analyzed in depth yet. It could be dust. But, you know, people don't read the fine print sometimes.
Let me ask you this question before you get on to the list proper. there was this huge announcement. It was a big publicity event. You know, we were told there was going to be a press conference about something, but it wasn't quite sure what it was. And as soon as people knew that, they were speculating on the internet. Physicists, as well as journalists, I should say, were blogging and trying to predict what this was going to be. So by the time it was announced, people kind of knew what it might be. And then everyone was just really excited. It exploded. You know, people were trying to watch the announcement live on the web and having a lot of difficulty even getting onto that webcast because so many people were trying to view it. It was all over the headlines. It was on television news. It was just everywhere. If they hadn't announced it in quite that way, if they had been a bit more conservative and, I don't know, maybe said, look, we've seen something interesting, you know, maybe they'd not made such a huge splash, but still announced it, but been very, very clear that they were, you know, these caveats that you mentioned in the paper, would it have made it onto your list?
That's a really good question. And I don't think so.
I'm asking because, you know, the way that science usually works, it's often, you know, somebody finds a hint of something and then another experiment comes along, maybe targets it in a slightly different way. And, you know, slowly we build up this body of knowledge where finally we say, actually, okay, yeah, we think we have seen it. So, you know, at what point is it exciting?
It's funny because it goes back to that whole idea of Kuhn's about whether science progresses in these jumps or whether it's more of a slow progression, that little building on little building on little building. You know, do we have these paradigm shifts, or do we have this sort of slow building up of stuff? And that's a very good question. I had that issue with a couple of possibilities for my list this year, where I looked at them and I said, well, it's interesting, but it's not quite there yet. But maybe by the time we get there, it won't actually be that interesting because it was so gradual getting there, and there won't be a big story. And I guess the way I think of it is, this is just a list.
Well, don't play down the importance of being on Ian Durham's list. Please don't do that. You know, I'm sure that, you know, lots of physicists listening will be hoping to get on there next year.
I have to say, a number of discoveries that were sort of there but not quite there on my list were made by people I actually know, and so I have to be very careful about that. One, for example, Howard Wiseman and two of his colleagues have a new paper out about having a multiverse that is actually testable. So could we test the multiverse idea?
I interviewed him last month for the FQXI podcast. So he has been on the FQXI podcast, if not in your list.
That's all right. He made it to the FQXI podcast, which is the important thing.
Yes.
So that was one of my other ones that didn't make the list, but one that was really worth mentioning. One of the other ones, there were two other ones I was going to bring up, actually three. One was, physicists created a tractor beam. And believe me, this is a really cool idea. So the idea is that they used ultrasonic sound waves to basically move an object closer towards the source of the ultrasonic sound waves. If you look really closely at what they did, and again, I don't mean to downplay it, it's just, it's not top five material. First of all, the object had a specific shape that was definitely designed such that it kind of helped it. Like, this wouldn't work with any shaped object. It was kind of wedge-shaped on the back end so that the ultrasonic waves went around and pushed it forward.
No, it's only useful if you need to move a triangle for some reason, I guess.
Exactly.
Without picking it up.
Exactly, right. The other thing is what are ultrasonic sound waves? I mean, or what are sound waves? Sound waves are just pressure waves in some medium. So it's really no surprise that if you bounce sound waves off of something, it would cause a pressure on something, which is essentially a force, which would cause it to move. It's neat, but it's not new physics in that sense. So one of the other ones that I did not make my list was this idea that they created a supernova in a laboratory. So what they did is they essentially had this carbon-based nanomaterial that they essentially just blew up in a laboratory, and it simulated a lot of the same effects that you see in a supernova explosion. And so they touted it as a supernova in a laboratory. But the underlying mechanism is completely different.
Yeah, this is, I guess, a problem that comes up with a lot of these kind of cosmological analog things in the lab, which are always really nice to talk about and you can learn things from, but you never really know how close they are when they say they've made a black hole out of lasers or...
Exactly. There are two other quick ones I want to mention that were not on my list, and this goes to the same thing we just discussed. So probably the only possible contender for an alternative to quantum mechanics is the de Broglie-Bohm theory, which is a different way of looking at quantum systems. One of the things it predicts is this concept of a pilot wave.
When we talk about these pilot waves, we sort of have this picture of trying to explain weird particle motion by saying that somehow these are being guided or controlled by another wave.
Yes.
That's the sort of the idea behind that.
And they observed, supposedly, de Broglie-Bohm pilot waves in fluid mechanical systems. Now, did they really observe de Broglie-Bohm? No, not really. You know, so you're seeing something that looks like a pilot wave, but the question is does that thing actually exist on a quantum level?
And again, just to say, when they said that they saw them, they were seeing kind of effects that we associate with the weirdness of quantum mechanics.
Yes.
Things like double slit interference and...
But that's not that unusual. You can see double slit interference with water waves. you can do this in your bathtub.
So it doesn't make your list, but we have now got something for people to try at home in their bathtub.
And presumably it's not dangerous to try in your bathtub. Well, there was one other that I was going to mention. Just recently, a group from Denmark has come out with, it's a new equation for modeling the way quantum systems behave, particularly at the atomic level. It's a problem that goes back close to 70 years. What the problem was is that modeling quantum systems in the presence of an environment is very difficult. You get above helium and really you're into simulations because, like, for instance, in a single atom, you get all the electrons are interacting with each other and somehow you've got to include all of that. So what these guys have done is they've found a way to represent the interaction, this is at the atomic level, of different atoms with each other in an analytical way that allows them to give a more exact solution to this stuff. Again, I have to read the paper to really understand what they're doing, and I haven't done that yet. It's something worth mentioning.
So the moral of the story for any researchers who want to get onto your list next year is try and release your paper in January so we have enough time to see if it stands up.
Indeed, they should have waited till January.
Phew, Ia Durham's a tough guy to please. Having heard what didn't make his top five, I can't wait to find out what did.
Well, keep listening, Brendan, because we'll start the actual top five later in this edition of the podcast.
So to recap, items that didn't make the cut include the Bicep 2 announcements of the now-questioned discovery of primordial gravitational waves, and with it, the first direct proof of inflation theory that later turned to dust. We've discussed this ongoing saga at length on the podcast over the past months. If you go to the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, you'll find links to interviews with the architects of inflation theory and FQXI members, Alan Guth and Andre Linde, and with cosmologist João Magalho, and astrophysicists Malcolm Fairbairn and Andrew Little, discussing first the announcement and then the fallout.
We're also posting links back to the November podcast, where I spoke with physicist Howard Wiseman about his testable multiverse theory, which Ian liked so much, in which Howard and his colleagues posit that quantum effects in our universe are caused by repulsive forces between multiple parallel classical worlds.
And you can read more about the acoustic tractor beam created by physicists at the University of Dundee, University of Southampton, and Illinois Wesleyan University, which is a cool achievement even if it didn't quite make Ian's list.
Likewise, you can read more about the laser supernova created in the lab by Jenna Meinecke of Oxford University as part of an international collaboration. Another great result.
We've had a lot of discussion in the FQXI forums on the pilot wave hydrodynamics experiments carried out by Yves Couder, Emmanuel Fort, and colleagues at the University of Paris Diderot that Ian mentioned.
So there are links to that too. Links to everything, basically. And there's a link to the paper by the Danish team that showed that it is possible for the first time to calculate the magnetic moments of atoms in complex, real-world conditions.
Now, if you're exhausted by all that, we recommend you take a break and relax. And maybe, I don't know, watch some videos about physics.
But Brendan, where can our listeners find a selection of excellent physics-based mini-movies?
Why, the FQXI website, of course, www.fqxi.org/community. This year, we invited you to show us the physics in our first video contest. Earlier in December, we announced the winners, who between them shared $40,000.
Thank you to everyone who took part. We received almost 120 entries this year. I was personally really impressed by the range of entries that we got. We had fiction thrillers. We had physics interpreted as kind of interpreted. There is a word there somewhere trying to get out. Interpreted as a sort of a mythological romance. We had lots of animation. We had music parodies, straight documentaries, demonstrations of experiments. We had biographies of physicists, some of whom are working now, showing their everyday lives, and accounts of historical physicists. We even had kids just having fun discovering physics for themselves.
And I was impressed by the overall quality of the videos, including the visuals, the editing, and the approaches to showing us physics. That goes for what you might call the amateur videos and mini videos created by the young students, such as David Hamilton.
If you're watching this video, you probably know what a refrigerator is, and you most likely have one at home. It's that big metal box in your kitchen that keeps your food cold and fresh. Let's look at how this cool machine works and learn some physics along the way.
Whose video, The Cool Physics of Refrigeration, won our Young Scientist Prize of $3,000 and a Skype chat with FQXI directors Max Tegmark and Anthony Aguirre.
You can see all the winning entries on the website, www.fqxi.org/community.
Where you can also watch the Google Hangout of the awards ceremony with Max and Anthony, where we were joined by the big winners who chatted about their movies. Congratulations to Marc Seguin, who teaches astrophysics and physics at Collège de Maisonneuve in Montreal, who won one of three top $10,000 prizes for One Physics to Rule Them All, which took us through the history of physics.
At first, we lived on a motionless flat world in the center of the universe, and the sky went around us once every day. But our world didn't stay flat for long. When the sun and the moon are exactly opposite in the sky, we noticed that the shadow of our world on the moon was always a circle, so we had to live on a sphere, the only body whose shadow is always a circle. But why was our world a sphere, and, more importantly, why did we stick to it and not drift off into space? Maybe there was no why, other than the gods made the world that way and they control its behavior through their actions, but there could be simpler answers. For instance, if the universe was made of a few basic elements, and if one of the elements, let's call it Earth, had the natural tendency to get the closest possible to the center of the universe, then it would naturally accumulate there in a huge Earth world, in the most compact arrangement possible, that of a sphere. Because of the Earth in our bodies, we were pulled downward, down being the direction towards the center of the universe. This was a system of explanation, a theory that was simple, elegant, and could explain many facts about the world. Physics was born.
Another $10,000 winner was Tianjun Shi, an independent motion graphics designer based in New York with a background in physics, who won for her absolutely enchanting animation, Why Do I Study Physics?
Physics told me some crazy stuff. Say, I'm not just sitting here doing nothing. I'm actually fighting against Earth gravity. And I'm not sitting still. I'm spinning at 1,000 miles per hour. Or even more than that, 67,000 miles per hour if you count the rotation of the Earth around the Sun. And maybe I'm not even here. I'm just a temporary accidental collision of two energy waves in one of the many, many universes in that split of a second.
And also grabbing $10,000 was FQXI member Dagomir Kazlikowski, who is a physicist at the Center for Quantum Technologies in Singapore, for Seeing Without Looking, a fiction thriller featuring physicists and FQXI member Flatko Fedral, in his first acting role as a criminal physicist roped in to help the police investigate a bomb threat using quantum physics.
Detective Bose here.
Listen carefully, Mr. Bose.
Detective Bose.
There's a bomb planted at the corner of Shenton Way and Maxwell Road. Get and wait for further instructions.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've heard this one before.
I'm afraid you haven't heard this one.
Do you recall the unexplained robberies at Marina Bay Sands last month?
That's classified.
Do you know what happened to the money?
What do you know about this?
We did it with the help of quantum teleportation, Mr. Bose. Goodbye.
You can also actually read an article about Kazlikowski's sort of day job, his FQXI-funded physics research on quantum contextuality on the website too. Going back to the video contest results, the audience favourite award of $3,000 went to physics-trained musician, or music-trained physicist, Tim Blaise of Acapella Science. Space is a pure gold. Why should it be stringy? Because it's quantum gold, classical, non-renormalizable. Any way you quantize, counter infinity, you see. For Bohemian Gravity, his string theory based reworking of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. So yes, thank you again to everyone who entered, voted, discussed, or just watched the videos. You know, it really has been a great year for physics in film. And not just because of our video contest. You know, I really enjoyed watching The Imitation Game a few weeks ago, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as mathematician Alan Turing, as he struggled during the Second World War to crack Germany's Enigma code, inventing modern computer science along the way. I definitely recommend it. Cumberbatch is excellent, as he usually is, and they've managed to turn, you know, maths into a real thriller. That said, there are a few question marks over its accuracy, and it's possibly problematic fictionalized depiction of Turing as having been suspected of being a spy.
And there's Theory of Everything, featuring Eddie Redmayne as Stephen Hawking, covering his relationship with his first wife, Jane, his early seminal work on black holes, and the deterioration of his health.
Unfortunately, neither of us have seen Theory of Everything yet, but I'm sure it'll be fantastic. But sticking with black holes, theoretical physicist Kip Thorne produced the blockbuster movie Interstellar, also this year, in which a team of astronauts must travel through a wormhole to a distant galaxy to look for a new home for humankind, encountering a black hole along the way. Now, Interstellar was inspired by real science, but it even generated some real science too, in return, as Ian Durham explains as we rejoin his countdown, and he leads us up to revealing number 5 on his list of the top physics stories of 2014.
Talking about Interstellar would be kind of odd to put it on the list because it's a Hollywood movie, and so it's not on my list. But as it turns out, what you saw, what everybody saw when they saw the simulation of the black hole in Interstellar, was essentially the most accurate visual simulation of a black hole ever produced. Kip Thorne, who originally came up with the idea for this movie with Linda Obst, who is one of the executive producers of the film, after they were set up on a blind date by Carl Sagan, years ago, and I guess it never worked out, but they remained friends. And they came up with this idea for this movie that was going to be scientifically accurate. And so what Kip did was he ran a bunch of equations for what goes on in the black hole, and he sent them to the guys who presumably worked for the film studio, who coded them up and made what you saw. And it turned out they learned new physics from it, to the point where they got two published papers out of this. Kip got one on the accretion disk in particular. That was where they learned new physics. And then there was one on the actual CGI rendering, or whatever it was that they used to actually render it. So pretty amazing stuff. It actually is pretty cool that you go to see this movie and it's like, it's just a cool movie. It's a great movie. And then you realize, wow, this really was correct.
Well, I'm happy that you mentioned Interstellar, just because one of the other things that's sort of been happening, there seem to have been a lot of physics films or films that would interest physicists or people that love physics this year. So there was The Imitation Game about Alan Turing, and then Theory of Everything about Stephen Hawking, which you might have seen. I haven't seen yet because it hasn't come out here. I don't know if that's not really a question. It's more of a comment that it's been a good year for physics in film. So
has been a very good year. So number five on my list, in keeping with our discussion regarding Interstellar and black holes, number five on my list is that some researchers have discovered, in particular, a group led by a guy named Alan Adams at MIT, has shown that black holes that actually feed, so just like the one in Interstellar, where it's actually got an accretion disk and it's sucking material in, they develop a fractal-shaped skin as they feed. So it's just a simulation, but it's a fascinating result. So essentially, when you throw stuff into a black hole, the surface, when we say the surface of a black hole, we mean the event horizon. And it responds like a fluid, and in particular, it can become turbulent. And the turbulence actually demonstrates fractal behavior. The surface of the black hole behaves like a Mandelbrot set from fractal geometry, much like the coastline of England, where it's technically infinite, because every time you zoom in on a little craggy part of the coastline of England, still craggy, and it's still craggy, and you keep zooming in and zooming in and zooming in, and theoretically speaking, it's infinitely long. So in this case, which is three-dimensional, the black hole would appear to have developed an infinite surface area, because every time you zoom in to look closer at it, it's got the same pattern repeated again, and you just keep zooming in, you keep getting the same pattern. The skin of the black hole, if you will, develops this fractal-like pattern, which is really, really odd.
It's odd, and, you know, I look at this fractal black hole horizons. It sounds fantastic. It's a great headline. I'm still not really sure what it means. You know, it's hard enough trying to imagine what the event horizon of a black hole is. Now we're being told it has an infinite surface area. Where do we go with that?
Well, I think it's important to note that when we say, when these researchers say that it has an infinite surface area, they say it in the same sense that a fractal researcher would say that the coastline of England has an infinite length to it.
Right.
You know, it's a mathematical construct in some sense, right? There's a difference between what we can describe with mathematics and what we actually can experimentally probe. Even if we had a black hole here that we could get close to and could measure in some way, shape, or form, we would never be able to measure infinity, and we can't measure infinity directly. So in some sense, it's a mathematical result, and what does it look like on the larger scale? Well, much like England looks like on the larger scale when you look at its outline, right? Presumably, if you believe that the universe is quantized at its fundamental level, or if you believe that our ability to measure the universe has a lower limit, then we would run into a point where we couldn't test this anymore, and it would appear finite to us, just very large. It still takes up a finite amount of space if you were to drop it in the middle of a solar system somewhere.
So what you're saying is I could actually walk around the coastline of England and it wouldn't take an infinite amount of time.
You could. And in fact, I believe there are people that do that regularly.
So, number five is the discovery that turbulent black holes have fractal skins. You'll find links to the MIT team's paper and news coverage of their work on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. We also recommend you check out the movie Interstellar, which I have heard is stellar.
It is, actually. I've seen it. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I actually also interviewed Kip Thorne about how the movie came about and the cultural differences he found between working in physics and working with, you know, Hollywood stars and directors. I wrote that for Nature, and so I'm putting up links to that interview and also a piece that I made for Nature's podcast about the film.
Wait, you did an interview for another podcast without telling me?
It meant nothing to me, Brendan, honestly. Please don't overreact. Instead, focus on the positives. We've run through a huge amount of great physics from 2014 so far, and we still haven't even reached the top four spot on Ian Durham's list.
Tune into the next edition of the podcast, which should appear in the next few days for the next installment.
And if you do that, you'll also hear us telling you more about FQXI's call for research proposals
and our new essay contest. Until then, you can contact us, as always, at podcast@fqxi.org or reach us on Twitter @FQXI. Playing us out is a snippet from the winner of the audience favorite award in the video contest, Tim Blaze, with Bohemian Gravity.
Thanks again to Ian Durham.
She's been Zia Morali.
And he's been Brendan Foster.
Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Such a sea of particles. A tachyon, a dilaton of gravity.
Revolution and your new M theory.
All the same, like to be strong. Duo, in the NESC.
Molecules and atoms, light and energy, time and space and matter. All from one united theory.
I'm off to create double-slit interference patterns in my bathtub.
And I'm just going to go and walk around the coastline of Britain.